Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impoga, and this evening we'll talk about African presidents who don't like to leave office. And joining us is first here in studio is my colleague, Henok Fente of VOA's Horn Service. Welcome back, Henok.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And joining us from Kampala, Uganda, is Charles Mwangu here. Charles is the East African Bureau Chief in Uganda. Good evening, Charles.
Good evening, Douglas.
How are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Good, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, and joining us from Durban, South Africa, is regular panelist Suleiman Mugula. He's an independent political analyst. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, Charles, and Venter.
Welcome to the show. And as I said, tonight our topic, we're talking about African presidents or leaders who don't like to leave office. Among 13 world leaders who have served longest, 11 of them are from Africa. Ranging from 40 years to 25. And talking of long-serving leaders in Kampala, Uganda, there, Yoweri Museveni has just served 30 years and 112 days today. And I'm told he was attending the swearing-in of a new speaker. Why don't we begin from there, Charles? Tell us the situation since after the swearing-in of the president. How is Kampala now? And the reaction of the people to the arrest of the leading opposition leader there?
I think those are two different things. One is, yes, on one hand, the NRM and President Yoweri Museveni are trying to consolidate his fifth elective term in office. Some people count his terms in office as seven. This is the seventh term because he served for the first 10 years. Unelected. He only subjected himself to elections after 10 years in 1996. But Kampala is generally calm at the moment. There's been reasonable deployment of the military since before elections and throughout the election and up till now, which has managed to maintain some level of some semblance of calmness, preventing what the opposition had promised. Protests that the opposition had promised. President Yoweri Museveni today, for the first time in history, sat through a session, the first session of the 10th Parliament of Uganda, which was electing a speaker and a deputy speaker. His interest was in, of course, maintaining the leadership of the former speaker, the speaker of the 9th Parliament, Rebecca Kadaga, and especially her deputy, Jacob Olanya, after he brokered a truce between the two, who had intended to contest against one another. So he's been there. He has addressed Parliament for the first time. Parliament had its first session today. And looks like with his main opponent, Dr. Kizza Besigye, safely away in a prison in Luzira, President Yoweri Museveni is looking towards setting up his new government.
I see. Henok, knowing this, where you have to have your main opposition, your main opponent in jail for you to be able to move things forward, that a good idea?
Well, it's a good idea for the presidency, if the aim is to stay in power, like you said. I also cover the Horn of Africa region, where we have two of the longest serving regimes, if you will. In Eritrea, you have Isaias Afwerki, who's been in power since 1991, I would say, but since Eritrea became a country.
25 years, 22 days.
Right. And the same story with Ethiopia. The ruling party is getting ready to celebrate 25 years of leadership. Malla Zenawi, of course, died in office. So when you take a look at the strategy in terms of the leaders who want to stay in power, it really makes sense for them, either to imprison their opposition, to intimidate, or to force them into exile. And they use this dictators, I guess they read the same book.
Yes.
And they make sure that there is no viable opposition. At least in Uganda's case, I would argue that there is a viable opposition in that country.
I see. Suleiman, your take on this, should do the... I mean, well, first give me a general take on the situation, our long-serving leaders, able leaders in Africa.
It is not surprising. It has become a culture in Africa. But all I can say is that the continent is facing a very huge problem compared to some of the huge problems it has faced in the past. You compare it, the current problem of dictatorship which we have on the continent can only be compared to the times of slavery, to the times of colonialism, and to the times of apartheid. It is within that category. That is where the continent is now. We are facing a horrible problem which we don't know as a continent what to do with it, because these leaders are callous, they are shameless, they are greedy, they are selfish, and they are ready to kill to stay in power. So at the moment, whatever is happening in Uganda is the same that can happen in Rwanda, is the same that will happen in Gambia, the same which will happen in Angola, is the same which will happen in Cameroon. So the whole continent has been held at ransom. I think, just like in those days of apartheid, colonialism and slavery, this is a very difficult and a very, very sad time to be born as an African.
I see.
Now, Douglas, can I chime in here? Yes. Because I think there is a difference between regimes, dictatorial regimes, versus people who are ruling a country for the longest time. And
there's no correlation in your opinion?
Well, there is a connection, but it's not one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and I also am not of the opinion that it is something I would compare to colonization and slavery.
Mm-hmm.
Because in some ways, in places where you don't have a viable opposition. Mm. Uganda's case is different. Mm. There is a viable opposition in Uganda. The case in Zimbabwe, you have a viable opposition. In fact, the opposition was worked in a power sharing agreement. So they have experience in administrative experience, and they've worked together as an opposition.
Mm.
In many countries, you do not have that. Of course, the people who are in power are making sure that the opposition are not strong enough to take over by many ways, discouraging them and forcing them into exile. They use many strategies. But also, the continent, the economy has been booming over the past two decades. This is wonderful news for Africa. And business people prefer to do business with people that they know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have stable governments for a long time...
You're describing these countries as stable?
Yes, it brings stability.
Okay.
I mean, take a look at Libya before and after Muammar Gaddafi.
Gentlemen, can I cut in?
Yeah, come in, Charles.
Can I cut in there?
Yes, go ahead.
I hear the line Enoch is taking. It is the argument that African leaders are making. They're trying to build a new mode of democracy based, interestingly, on the Western concept of regular elections, but they're telling the West to keep out of their politics in terms of how many times they get elected. Now, the question of stability, Enoch, that's where I have fundamental issues. If you look across the continent, you find that notion of stability is a fallacy in the long run. You take good examples. The Democratic Republic of Congo, former Zaire, had a leader who stayed put for 30 years. The moment he left power, that whole notion of stability was thrown into the wind. Look at Libya, for example. Muammar Gaddafi stayed put. Everybody is blaming the West for dealing Muammar Gaddafi a bad hand because of oil, because of his gold reserves, because of his trying to build a new currency for Africa. I hear all those arguments. But if a leader held power for 42 years and did not plan how to exit, and his exit came the way it came for Gaddafi, you see what's happening in that country. Egypt, for example, Hosni Mubarak stayed for the time he stayed, and the moment he created power. So that element of stability is pyrrhic in the best way to describe it. Even Uganda, for example, President Yoweri Museveni's biggest challenge is he came in on the promise that he wanted to create stability. His credit, he's created stability in this country for the last 30 years. And Douglas, I think your numbers were wrong, because President Museveni has only been in power now for 30 years, and today is the 19th, and I think about 7 days.
Oh, I gave him an extra...
Because he was born in on May 12th.
I gave him an extra 100 days.
You gave him 120. Yes, I think you gave him a little more time than he has been in power.
I see.
But if President Museveni is unable to guarantee that after him, that stability will be maintained, then the whole notion of stability gets thrown through the wind. And the other thing, Enoch, on the question of a viable opposition, the Ugandan opposition has had tendencies of showing seriousness, but it's faced with such enormous challenges that it can't grow. The example is in this parliament, which was they finished swearing in yesterday, elected a speaker today. The numbers of opposition representation in parliament has significantly weakened. The opposition cannot demonstrate that it has a strong grassroots network that it can rely on. That is why they were not able to bring in more numbers into parliament. Yes, there will be an argument that says they were faced with such enormous challenges. They didn't have money. They couldn't. Security was against them. Yes, that is a given. But also building the opposition parties as institutions that can withstand the pressures of money, the pressures of intimidation, the pressures of harassment, is something that is still lacking in these countries that appear to be having what one can what one would want to describe as viable opposition.
In addition to that one, if I come in from the other side,
okay,
let's look at it from the other way around. Yes, our friend Venta says there is stability, but let us also look at it from the other side. Look at Senegal under Macky Sall. Look at Mugafuri, Tanzania under Mugafuri. Look at Ouattara in Ivory Coast. Ouattara on the continent. Ivory Coast is the fastest growing economy on this continent because of the breather of change. I bet Nigeria is on the takeoff from the new policies which President General Buhari has put in place. One can see that there is hope compared to the decadent regimes which have been there for 30 years. They have run out of ideas. Their ideas have been overtaken by time. So, number two, when you look in these countries, if you talk about the opposition parties and those which are viable opposition parties, you find that each country has got different problems, different settings. Some of the countries, the fixed factors are so difficult. They are so prominent. The fixed impediments are so difficult for an opposition to take effect. They are incompatible. You find the institutions have been personalized. The financial institutions have been taken over. So however visible you might be, they are visible opposition, but they are not. They cannot be able to overtake these regimes.
I see.
Let's call them visible, but not viable as such.
Okay, for those joining us right now, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America series here in Washington. Our topic tonight is African presidents who don't like to leave power. Our panelists are Charles Mwanguhi, a bureau chief of the East African in Kampala, Henok Fente of VOA Horn Service, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9. Now, gentlemen, both of you have alluded to this point whereby the institutions are break down if this, the longer these guys stay in power. And Charles gave examples of Egypt, of Libya, of, and there are many across the continent. And it appears there is a line that draws among all these leaders that the longer they stay, the more they destroy the institutions, the more they personalize those institutions. I was reading that in Kampala, for instance, the president was in his speech, he said he gave his members of parliament money to go and celebrate. I'm wondering whether that was his personal money or government money. So with the breakdown of institutions, this is sort of it's a chicken and egg type of thing, whereby you either keep these guys to maintain a semblance of stability, or as soon as they go down with the countries. Let me begin with Henok here to react to that, since you mentioned a bit of stability.
Right, to clarify my point earlier on, I'm not of the opinion, or neither am I here to defend what African leaders who are staying for the longest time in power are presenting as a pretext
for
their stay.
Yeah.
The point that you made earlier is very important. Nobody wants to leave power. If I were an African president, maybe you, Douglas, you wouldn't want to leave power unless the institutions force you. Take the U.S., for example. Let's assume the Republican candidate gets elected, Donald Trump. And if the U.S., institutions in the U.S. did not force Barack Obama to leave power, maybe he would be thinking, maybe it's better off if I stay for the sake of the people of the U.S., which is the same argument
A few of these guys advance.
Just last week that the Rwandan president, Paul Kagame, made the same logic. Anyway, so unless the institutions are forcing these dictators with long-term
term limits,
they're not going to leave. Now, the point I was trying to make is long-term limits are not necessarily a bad thing for business. As long as the institutions are there to keep the check and balances.
Yeah, but to some people, the idea that the two can't coexist. You can't have somebody staying in power for that long time and killing...
Take Singapore, for example.
And killing institutions.
Take Singapore, for example. They registered a tremendous economic growth.
True.
And, of course, singling out country-specific examples really does not apply to a general context of Africa. So the point is, it's not necessarily a bad thing.
So, Charles, you think the institutions are strong in some of those countries? Or, I mean, I'm getting a bit confused with Henok's idea here. Because at least in a country like Uganda...
Douglas and Henok.
In a country like Uganda, I know that some of these institutions, the president can direct the Bank of Uganda. The central bank is not independent, as they say. The judiciary is packed with so-called cadre judges. The police is militarized and answers to the president. So the army is the answers to the president. So what institutions are there to talk about?
And the corruption and the nepotism, it wouldn't be fair to generalize. It wouldn't be fair to generalize about the competence of the individuals in those institutions. But the fact that if you need to keep power, you cannot build institutions. And those institutions start from things as basic as the political party to which you subscribe as a president or as a leader. Because if it becomes stronger, it's going to put its own survival ahead of your staying power. If you put institutions and make them stronger, they're going to think beyond you. The problem with the African leaders staying in power for long is they do not have a kind of timeline of when they want to exit power. And they do not share that. Therefore, the thinking is every election, because the Western powers on which our democracy is modeled keep demanding that you go through an election, and that is where you try to draw your legitimacy from. So the institutions appear in name, they exist in name, but they do not exist in reality. They are powerless to influence the course of either the development planning for the country or the politics of the country or anything like that. You find that across the continent.
I see.
It's not just a Ugandan problem.
So, Suleiman, then these Western countries that want African countries to have a semblance of democracy seem to be in, support some of these long-serving leaders.
Yes. First of all, to wrap up the other question of overstaying under regimes, the bottom line, Douglas, is democracy is about checks and balances. Any system without checks and balances is a doomed system. Mm-hmm. Once a regime kills that checks and balances, the more it stays, it means it is just destroying the country. To go to the second question, which you are talking about, the international community, I think the international community are the godfathers of these dictators. They are accessories in destroying these African countries. Look, Douglas, here we are. The example of Rwanda, Gambia, the other day, one opposition leader was killed.
Mm.
In Uganda, the opposition leader is in prison. In Uganda, the security forces have been using all types of ammunition, live ammunition, cables, sticks, anything, to hit, to beat, sometimes to massacre innocent unarmed civilians. Guess what? The EU, the AU, the European Community, the United States of America, it calls that government the partners in development with excessive abuse of human rights. It calls them partners in development when the hospitals don't have X-rays, when hospitals don't have cancer machines, when hospitals don't have ambulances. They propose to give them more aid.
I see.
They have not accounted for the amount of money which you are given for health for the past 10 years, but now they feel there is some work going on. For how long?
Uh-huh.
Which means the problems of Africa, the problems of our people in Africa are perpetuated by the developing countries themselves. They are working as godfathers to these inefficient, corrupt, and callous leaders of this continent.
I see.
In terms of the development partnership, Douglas.
Briefly. Hmm?
In terms of development partnerships, the U.S., China, mainly emerging markets, wanting to do business in Africa, that's a development partnership, a business partnership that's been fostered and created in throughout Africa, mutually benefiting both peoples.
Both peoples or both governments, leaderships?
It depends on the context.
Okay.
It really depends on the
You're
context.
Right.
But the U.S. also talks about the human rights records of each country.
Mm.
And there's also civil society, local civil societies within countries in Africa in general.
Mm.
And International Human Rights Watch, Amnesty and all coming up with their reports and talking about it. Yes, there is a double standard in the way this is played out by way of policy and implementing it.
Yes.
But these two are two separate things.
I see. We're on short of time. Charles, the recent election in Uganda, you had a role to play in seeking for electoral reforms and all kind of stuff. Now, in your opinion, generally, if a leader has been elected 7 times and is willing to keep going, what does that do to the voter participation, people participating in the electoral process or in their own democracy? Are they likely to come again in droves, or are they likely not to say, well, we can't do much? What are you observing there? Are people more...
If the result is predictable, it just doesn't have to be election. If people know that the likely outcome of an election can be known beforehand, You see this among football fanatics. At the dead end of the season, after Leicester, for example, in the UK Premiership,
yes,
after Leicester has wrapped up, there is no motivation for Manchester United fans to go and attend a football match, even if they are season ticket holders. So that same thing applies. When at the Citizens Coalition for Electoral Democracy in Uganda, for example, one of the major elephants in the room for better governance also takes a back end.
I see. Suleiman was weighing down. So, are the people, what's the role of the people? Are the people to blame for not having their voices heard, or they don't have a choice? They just have to let things stay as they are.
They don't have a choice because violence, torture has been legalized by these regimes which don't want to introduce democracy, or who have flouted democracy, who have made it work on their own or for their own interests. By legalizing and institutionalizing these vices, they are condemning the countries to more generations of violence. Once violence becomes a culture, it will haunt the country for many years. Once the apartheid regime institutionalized violence, it has haunted South Africa up to today. Gaddafi institutionalized the violence, Libya is still burning. Said Barre, Mobutu, and so on. They are not only doing a disservice to their own people, but they are destroying the countries.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we need right now is to get a Pan-African movement to fight against dictatorship. We need eminent people like Mo Ibrahim, the Mbekis, the Chissanos, the First Time Mogai, the Obasanjos, to lead this continent to fight against dictatorship. Because with the dictatorship, the continent is going nowhere. Even those countries who are progressing, they will be affected by the after effects. The way you are seeing, Burundi is affecting all those areas. DRC is going to affect all those areas. So the whole East Africa is restless because of the nature of the disease which whom we are having in the region.
I want 10 seconds, Henoch. The idea of a continental movement, viable?
Building capacity, building institutions, very important. Increasing accountability, very important. Whether it's one person leading for a long time, whether it's collective leadership for the longest time, or whether it is countries that have term limits. The most important thing for me is being able to build these institutions. That's how we can have a lasting system that works for us.
Trouble is, Henoch, no leader who stays over 20 years can see build institutions. Those who actually have managed to build institutions do them in the first 5-10 years.
It's not mutually exclusive.
Well, gentlemen,
it is inherently contradictory.
Yes, because if you want to build institutions, you build them so that you can, when you leave, other people can take over and the country runs. Well, we're out of time. We shall maybe revisit this topic. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague here, Henoch Fente of VOA's Horn Service, Charles Mwangu here, the East African Bureau Chief in Uganda, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
The pleasure is ours. Thank you for inviting us.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mvunganyi, and our engineer tonight was Justin Twite. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program or you want to listen to it again, you can access it at our website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Thanks very much for tuning in tonight. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, in Washington.